Cherie is rung from Arizona in the United States. Hello.
Hi, Luke. How are you?
I'm good, Cherie. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. My husband, Jason, listens to you all the time. I don't get quite as much time to, but he said, you've got to talk to him today, babe. It's all about nurses.
Well, it's International Nurses Day. It's the birthday of Florence Nightingale, and it's an internationally recognised day, and we are saluting nurses today. And I'm giving away this fantastic product that I endorse called Power Pollen Nature Bee. It's a health product. It's completely natural. But I want to talk to nurses about what they do, and I want to hear their stories. So you've rung in from the United States. How long have you been a nurse?
I started my nursing in 1986.
Wow.
In a little hospital down in Tasmania called the Mersey General Hospital.
Yeah.
And so I'm a hospital trained nurse, so I've done 35 years. Came to Phoenix in Arizona 2 years ago. I've been an ICU emergency nurse for all of my career.
Wow.
I loved nursing until I got to America, let me put it that way.
Why did you stop loving nursing when you got to the States?
Because the nursing system here is incredibly under-resourced. The nurses don't have the same focus on patient care here, and that's a horrible thing to say. In Australia, ICU, if you have someone on life support,
yep,
that is one-on-one nursing. That is intensive care nursing. You provide holistic care for that patient, from managing their ventilator to managing their drugs to giving them, you know, a foot massage to keep the circulation going in their skin. We do everything in Australia.
And I would imagine also part of that is liaising and communicating with their families.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's huge. That's one of the biggest time consumers of nursing, especially in ICU, because the people there are so sick. But here in America, my ratio, if I'm lucky, is 1 to 2 of those patients. So I have 2 of those patients, not 1.
Wow.
And trying to work around that with no resources. Like, I worked at, the Wesley, the Martyrs, the Royal Brisbane. I worked all around in those ICUs. We have fantastic lift teams. We have things at our fingertips in those hospitals. And here in the States, you know, I've got a 26-bed ICU. And if I want to do a blood sugar level, which can become a critical part of your patient's management, I have to chase all over the unit for 10 minutes to find one. Whereas in the Martyrs, for example, and Royal Brisbane, they are at every bedside. It's just simple things like that.
Why don't you talk to the administrators or the administrator of the hospital and say, listen, I've got a list of things here that are going to be really simple that's going to make our jobs better. Could you sit down and have a listen to me? Do they listen?
No, I've tried to talk to my manager at this hospital to say this is... And I try not to come across as this is the way we do it in Australia, because
that gets
Americans
their
don't like to hear that. Mm. Yeah, they don't want to hear that. So this is the way that I've found has worked really, really well in the past, is what I've said. Mm. And it just, they won't put the money into it. They even, you know, lifting and turning a patient. In Brizzy, we had 2 wardies that would come round. You would have an access nurse who would come and keep your patient's airway safe, and these 2 guys or 2 women would turn your patient while you did all the care, change the sheets, wash them, clean them, whatever needed doing. Here, for example, I've been working here during COVID, and
I wanted to ask you about that. Where you are in the United States, how are they coping with COVID? Can you please inform us what's going on?
Settled down at the moment, but I was obviously here at Christmas, January, February, March, and it was horrific. It was the most gruesome and grueling time of my nursing career. You've got these people who they're dying, and you can't do anything for them, but they're still on the ventilator, and the relatives want you to do everything for them, but there's nothing you can do. And they're drowning in their own secretions. They can't oxygenate, no matter what you do with the ventilators and their oxygen. There is nothing there. They're just dying slowly, and it was horrific. And I was looking after 2 of them at a time, and you know, you couldn't even turn them. Just turning them took away every bit of their oxygen reserve. Mm. And nurses who know how important it is to turn your patient every 2 hours so they don't get really bad bed sores, we just couldn't do it. And we were just losing people everywhere. Phoenix was one of the worst hit areas. We were getting 6,000-7,000 cases a day, 200 people dying a day in our city here.
I was about to ask you a rhetorical question because I think I know the answer. I mean, we've kept it pretty much under control here in Australia, even though we do have some recalcitrant premiers that will shut down borders at the drop of a hat. Maybe that's a good thing, but at least we're girt by sea. But, I mean, we have 6 states and 2 territories. You've got 50 states with 50 different governors wanting to go in 50 different directions. It must have been very hard to keep all the mice in a hat.
I mean, the people of Arizona, the people of Phoenix, generally were really good about wearing masks. And at the end of the day, when you've got that much, you know, of droplet infection disease around in the air and on surfaces and everywhere, wearing the mask doesn't protect you, no, but it stops your droplets from getting out and infecting the other person.
How do Americans, in your experience, feel about wearing masks?
Oh, we've been doing it here for 12 months. You know, every time, not every time we go out, every time we go into a public situation, so a shopping mall, for example, or a restaurant or somewhere like that, we have to put them on. And that still was the case here in Phoenix until a couple of weeks ago. Everything's pretty much opened up again.
How do Americans feel about contact tracing? You know, here in Australia, we have these QR codes, at least in New South Wales, you know, and your phone reads it, and then the Department of Health knows exactly where you've been. Or if you don't QR, you sign yourself in and sign yourself out of different venues. I can't imagine Americans taking that well.
No, that they would not give up that freedom of their right to free movement. No way. We've had conversations with them here. And it got so prolific, you know, when you've got 6,000-7,000 people a day, that's impossible to contact trace, no matter. There's just not the resources to do that. But again, we mix with a very wide range of people, and there is no way they would let that happen. To contact trace, no. You leave it up to me. They say, you leave it up to me, and I'll contact the people that I want to contact, yeah, as to, you know, letting them know, number one, that I've had this thing, and number two, that I've been around them. They just... I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Yes, Americans don't want to be told what to do. They certainly, because of their history, they don't want to let Big Brother know where they're going and where they've been. I get that. And that's why contact tracing in the United States has been an absolute disaster, because the folks just won't do it. I mean, you know, it's like their right to bear arms. There's no way I'm telling the government where I've been. I'm talking to Cherie, who is an Australian. She's a nurse in Phoenix, Arizona, in the United States. It must have been frightening for you. How did you not catch it?
I don't know, Luke. I think that in January last year that I caught it before it was known. I got a respiratory tract infection that floored me for 3 weeks. I couldn't taste anything. I couldn't smell. I coughed and coughed and coughed, went to the doctors. I'm an asthmatic. Nothing we did for my asthma would work. And I fought it and I got over it, but we didn't know about it.
I reckon you had it. But how many people did you infect? I mean, when you were feeling ill, was there testing kits available?
No. We only had 2 known cases in Phoenix at that time.
Yeah.
But this new disease that had come out of China. My husband caught it. Jay got it in May last year. He just was out of a barbecue at the time. And everyone at the barbecue got sick.
Yeah.
And they all had COVID, you know. It was.
Yep. And then they came they came into contact with people, and their people came into contact with people, and you had no idea who was anywhere, because Americans would fight the idea of contact tracing. So things are a bit better today. Today it's Wednesday, the 12th of May. Do you think you're getting on top of it?
Yes, we are. There was a period for 2 weeks where my 26-bed ICU had no COVID patients. We're starting to sneak up again. We had about 3 or 4 last week. three or four this week. But that's the way it happened back in January, February, March. We had three or four, and then all of a sudden we had 15, then we had 20, then we had two patients in each bed space after that, and we got up to 40-odd patients in our 26-bed ICU, all of them COVID. And it just happened multiplying over 3 weeks.
We got the impression that the former president Donald Trump poo-pooed coronavirus, the China disease he used to call it. He didn't believe it was serious, and then of course he caught it. But even then, he played it down. I'm immune now. Remember all that? Is there a feeling living in the United States that the Biden administration's taking it more seriously?
I think the vaccination program seems to have sold everyone.
Yeah,
and that was started by Trump. So Biden's just carrying on what was started by Trump as far as that goes. But people are very relaxed about it now. You know, everything in Arizona has basically opened up. We do still have to wear our masks when we go into Walmart or Fry's, which is our Coles or Woolies, and do our grocery shopping. We still have to wear masks. I'm double masking at my job, so that means I wear an N95. Covered with another surgical mask on top for my entire 12-hour shift. And I don't think that's going away for a long time. But that's protective, you know, for me. Many of my colleagues caught it. You know, some even caught it who weren't in a physical condition that they could look after COVID patients.
That is Cherie, who rang me earlier this morning here on the night shift from Phoenix, Arizona, live, a nurse. She said she'd much rather be nursing in Australia than in the United States, and what a shit fight that's been as far as COVID's concerned. So there you go. AstraZeneca, the vaccination of choice in the US as well, and the take-up there a little bit quicker than the take-up here in Australia. But if you missed any of that, or if you'd like your friends to hear it, it'll be on our podcast later today. Jess puts that together at the end of every program. Download the Listener app, LISTNR, the Listener app, and you can hear everything that Triple M has to offer in living colour and wonderful wide stereo. 133353 is the phone number. We'll take some calls right after the break. Those of you who are leaving me for your breakfast programs, do appreciate your company. We'll do it again tomorrow.